And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
We have Jeremy, but no Brett.
Yeah, and Jeremy, feel free to talk, man.
Oh, sorry, I have to make the little pictures change.
Oh. Oh, you're actually doing something.
He's pushing buttons, making the video look interesting and relevant, and
I see.
All that other fun stuff.
I just sit here and yak. I figure that's all anybody else does.
There's going to be some special pictures along the line here.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh.
That could be fun. So really quickly, this is probably the first time a lot of people have heard the season 7 intro, or at least recognized it. You know, we're mentioning it. Hey, did you notice the season 7 intro? Did you recognize it?
Yeah. You know, here's what's really interesting about that piece.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it's so different than what the musical cues were for even for the first season, you know, and as much as it evolved across the years.
Mm-hmm.
But listening to it again, I'm so glad they didn't go with it. It sounds so terribly generic when all is said and done.
And for me, okay, just to clarify for people who didn't recognize it, that is the original score or some of the original score from the music that Stuart Copeland of The Police did for the original version of The Gathering. That version is actually not on home video anywhere anymore.
I was going to say it was once, but no longer.
Actually, it was never on home video in the United States, ever.
Oh, okay.
Yes. The the only version of the original version of The Gathering that I ever saw was a Japanese import Laserdisc, which I do happen to have, by the way.
I see. Well, that's interesting. This is a good segue because, as it is a feedback-a-palooza,
mm-hmm.
One of the emails I got here, this comes to us from Nan Bailey. She's a longtime listener.
Okay.
And she writes, "Hey guys, I was going through a pile of Pilot DVDs at a local store recently, just wondering what Pilot I could possibly want to watch without bothering with the rest of the series. And originally passed over The Gathering because I had the complete set. Then I had to go back and look at it more closely when I realized that the picture was of Delenn Jacquard, Star Furies, and Sheridan. No Sinclair in sight. Someone wanting a Bruce Boxleitner fix is in for a big surprise."
Hmm.
Well, I did a little research because I was curious about that. And like Nan and so many others, I've got the 5-disc set.
Uh-huh.
There is, and actually found it at the library, there is originally a 2-disc set, or if I remember right, it was actually a single disc that was two-sided. One side had The Gathering, the other side had In the Beginning. So
oh.
The artwork was In the Beginning artwork, but it really doesn't say anywhere on the front cover that it also contains In the Beginning. Not that I could see. Not on the library copy, anyways. It was The Gathering.
Interesting. Was it the old style artwork that was on the videotapes, on the VHS tapes? Do you remember those?
No, I don't. Because I don't think I ever really saw any of those, truth to tell. I think I might have seen one or two, but the visuals elude me at this time.
Okay. Did you ever see the covers of the original Laserdiscs? It had...
Yeah.
It resembled one of those TV guide ads where you had the different headshots of the different characters coming out of what looked like a weird Aurora Borealis.
Yes,
shade
yes.
Of
this was
rainbows.
The same. Uh-huh.
Okay.
This was that kind of a thing. Yep.
Yep
I'll have
okay.
to post on the website or find a JPEG somewhere.
That's interesting.
Yep.
So it said it was The Gathering, but it was really The Gathering and In the Beginning?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Huh.
Just one of those anomalies that B5 doesn't have a whole lot of time-space anomalies like certain other franchises, but they got enough weirdness in their packaging to make up for it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Don't get me started on the weird release schedule that was the Laserdiscs from Warner Brothers. My goodness, who thought that was a good idea?
Well, you know, I think it's just part and parcel. I don't know what it was. I can imagine it was weird, but, you know, knowing how Warner seems to have treated the property, you know.
To remind everybody, they released the first half of season one and the first half of season five at the same time.
Oh, nice.
The first half of season two and the first half of season four at the same time. And all of season three. And so you're missing.
No, they never finished.
They never finished. It was
so
weird.
That is so weird.
Yeah, and I still have all those laser discs.
That I'm not surprised about.
Like the incompleteness of it drives me crazy. just saying. Oh, so exactly how many voicemails do we have backed up?
We got a bunch. I do it on purpose so that we have these special times together.
Excellent.
And not because I get busy and don't really check it like I should.
Okay. Well, let's...
I promise.
Let's start getting our way through them.
All right. Bring it on, Jeremy.
Hello, this is Neil from Booyah, listening to show 249 and hearing Gary also pipe in about unveiling the name makes me think that the two of us should... get together and have a comic book, Babylon 5 comic book podcast episode. Anyway, that's an idea. Maybe the two of us can unite and discuss all the original series plus the miniseries. That's all.
I like that idea.
I do too, Gary. The challenge has been thrown.
I think that actually Neil and Gary should do that comics episode here, and we'll just sit back and ask questions and let them run with it.
There we go. I like that idea too.
I do.
I think everybody likes the idea that if Tim talks less, it's a good thing for everybody involved.
Well, see, you'll still get your talking in because they will be the arguing. And then you will ask questions that go off on four different tangents. And then we'll have to, like, pull the conversation.
Yes.
So we will get the best of all worlds. Gary and Neil will get to talk about the comics. You will get to talk, period. And I'm sure somewhere in there, Gary will get his potholes, even if he has to create it himself.
Exactly. Yay. Okay, next one.
This is Neil from Bowie, listening to the first part of show 250 with all the speculation about the rumors stemming from Walter Koenig's post about JMS renegotiating, possibly, which we, a few days later, found out just a misinterpretation of other stuff that JMS said, but... Anyway, it's you know, these months after the fact, it's interesting to hear that all again, and just hope that something someday will work out. Maybe JMS really will get the rights back and make something on his own. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is he mentioning the fact that my editing is still a little behind, or?
Oh no, no, not at all, no. I don't think that's it at all. I think
okay.
I'm just gonna say that as Babylon 5 fans, we will gladly accept any torture regarding what might have been, and we'll do it at every available opportunity, even if it's months down the road. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Hello, this is Neil from Booyah, listening to show 250 and the fascinating discussion about To the Ends of the Earth, the unproduced script. And, of course, that just brings to mind the big question that whether we, by this time, by the time you are listening to this message, whether we know more from... Jason Davis, just when the next volumes of the script series, what the hell happened to Crusade? are coming out. So anyway, just hope that by the time you're playing this message, we'll have some more information, and that information will be spread around. That's all.
Well, I hopefully by saying what I'm about to say, that'll stir up some response. But I think the Crusade, the B5 book Crusade book series has gone the way, same way as the B5 Crusade series itself.
No, don't say that.
Incomplete and unfinished. And we will be left longing for more for all eternity.
No, I firmly believe that the Jason Davis has contracted with Dr. Max Eilerson, and they are currently scavenging sites out on the rim looking for more unearthed, as yet unearthed, Crusade treasures to bring us.
I like your thought better, but I'm not holding my breath.
When it comes to Crusade-related stories and anecdotes, I will be irrationally optimistic 7 different ways from Sunday. I have my faith in you, Jason.
Well, this is me up before we listen to Show 250, the Ends of the Earth discussion, and about the half dollar floating in space. I think I'm going to go with Tim. I think something Earth Force related might have been better. You know, a badge, or, you know, what immediately came to my mind was a medal from the end of, from the line. That might have been something, you know, something that was passed on down from father to son, perhaps of another survivor from the Battle of the Line. Might have been cool, but that probably would have been at least the one that we saw in Babylon 5 was probably bigger than what they had in mind. But still, that would have been an interesting visual there. That's all.
I that's an interesting thought, but I think that goes too far the other way. One of the problems I have with the half dollar floating is not only is it sort of an anachronism in terms of just time, it visually it would be a play to people who would not necessarily understand the Babylon 5 universe. Well, not every viewer knows Babylon 5, but everybody knows a half dollar, so that'll really drive it home, and that really stretches it. By the same token, I don't know that too many fans even would necessarily recognize right off what a Battle of the Line medal would be. I think the middle ground would be an Earth Force patch, or, you know, some visual cue we've already seen on a uniform to make that tie-in much more effective. But
I thought we saw something Battle of the Line related. We saw Sinclair's metal. Only for a half a second.
Right. And that's my point. It was close to 8 years prior.
But it did say it had something about, you know, for those who stood, you know, the Battle of the Line or something around. It actually had that engraved around the edge of it. So
right.
if they had filmed it just right, you would have been able to at least see Battle of the Line around the edge of it. So people would have gone, oh, okay. No. But how many people would have caught that?
Right. You and I and Neil and Gary and the other 5 people listening to this podcast would have. You know, but the person that you got hooked on B5 midway through the second season wouldn't have.
Gotcha.
That's my point.
Hello, this is Neil from Booyah, listening to Show 252, and heard the call-in about where I was hoping to provide contact to Christopher Franke. Unfortunately, as I believe I emailed you, that didn't pan out. My friend no longer has his contact information. So sorry about that, but Anyway, I'll keep an ear out. That's all.
I believe that if as many, if you go to Sonic Images, the Sonic Images website, I believe there is still a contact email in there. Whether or not anyone's actually reading that email, I don't know. Because right. I've sent messages to that email on average twice a year for the past 5-6 years. Yeah.
Yeah, well, at this point, they're probably looking, oh, it's that Summer Brooks again.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Is she not getting the message?
What does this stalker chick want?
Yeah, right. They all say they want my music, but...
This is Alfred Boys, just listening to show 253. Interesting discussion about the four captains, and I agree with most of the opinions expressed there. I made a few guesses that they were then agreed upon relatively quickly. So that was quite an interesting take on all that. And this new, rather this different collectible that that Tim brought up about the piece scraps of Babylon 5 clothing. That was a bit weird. I think I had heard about that somewhere, but definitely not something that I'd be looking for either. That's all.
I remember those cards, that set where it had scraps of actual costumes on them. I found them at a sci-fi convention, actually.
Right.
And I didn't even know they had been out, because they came out, let's see, there was one series that included a Harlan Ellison autograph, and then the series after that had the one with the scraps of clothing. And I had just found that first one. I didn't know that there were new sets of Babylon 5 cards until I saw that set. So I was actually buying the complete set plus some of the chase cards that I wanted. And then I realized that there was yet another set that had the scraps of clothing. And when I realized exactly how much money they wanted for the cards with the scraps of uniforms on them, I was like, you've got to be kidding. You know, I'd pay that if I got my own full Army of Light uniform.
Yeah,
but
right.
I'm not paying for, like, literally, it was what, half an inch square?
I think what I saw was like a maybe an inch by inch and a half, inch by 2 inch swatch of fabric. And you know, like so much other stuff in this realm of collectibles, not that I'm an expert, but what little I've read, without a letter of authenticity, it could simply be off a bolt of cloth that was used to make the uniforms and not necessarily directly from the costume itself. I don't know. And I've never been well-heeled enough to really be a collector at that level. But it also, like Neil says, that doesn't do much for me on an emotional level that I feel the need to investigate that further. You know, I mean, that seems like such a kind of, I don't want to say oddball, because that's sort of a value judgment, but it's like, it's okay. So it's a swatch of cloth. Yeah.
Now, there are some chase cards that were expensive from like the early sets that I still wouldn't mind having, like some of the hologram, like there was a hologram cards in the very, very first set. I think at one point in time, I saw those going for like $80 a piece, 75, 80 bucks each. And I was like, wow. Really? Really? You're just taunting me now, aren't you? But yes, we will discuss the trading cards, which actually mine are in a binder sitting right in front of me on the other side of the table there. And I think that is where I stuffed the, what is it? I think a country in Europe put out Babylon 5 stamps.
Really?
Yeah. And I bought the whole sheet of them. I think it was like $4 for the entire sheet. I'll have to dig those up, and I don't remember what I paid for them, but it was relatively inexpensive enough that I bought two of them. And they're very nicely done. Very nicely done stamps. But
we should get a scan of that.
I plan to as soon as I hook up my scanner.
There you go.
Yes. I will yes, that's on my tab for this week to reintroduce my computer to a new printer because the other one rolled over and died.
Oh.
How inconvenient. Anyway, we will take right now a really quick break and come back with the metric boatload of voicemails yet to come.
Yes.
Don't miss what could be the last Parsec Awards ceremony.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's kind of harsh. What makes you say that?
You know, because of the whole December 2012 Mayan calendar thing.
Oh, right. Well, whoever wins will be proud for a little while anyway.
Well, don't let the end of the world deter you from entering.
The Parsec Awards, a celebration of speculative fiction podcasting. Nominations are open April 15th to June 1st, 2012. Just go to ParsecAwards.com, and we hope to see you at the Parsec ceremony at DragonCon. Oh, wait. Good thing we upgraded the Gregorian calendar a few years back.
And we're back with more Feedback-a-palooza extravaganza doble.
Whoa. I'm going to read actually the first part of an email. I think this is going to be good. We're going to break this into two. So the first two parts of this comes to us from Joe Carfley. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, Joe. He chimed in on the website but also sent this in his email. And he says, I want to address some of the issues that brought up if Crusade Season 2 had happened. He writes, number one, is Gideon dead? I think he was going to die. Gary Cole was said not to be too happy with his role, and the fact that no one really bought into him as captain didn't help matters either. I'm sorry. I swear to God I have not been drinking tonight. let me read that all over. Is Gideon dead? I think he was going to die. Gary Cole was said not to be too happy with his role, and the fact that no one really bought into him as captain didn't help matters either. I do think they were going to kill him off. The other question is, what type of character was going to be the new captain? If Earth Force was going to lead the mission, I think we would have seen a more Jean-Luc Picard-type captain. No poker, no wild hunches, and no shower scenes with Lockley. We would have gotten a straight-laced guy who had no big secret past or wanted to chase shadows, but focused on the mission. It would lead to characters taking sides until they realize he is a decent person, or maybe not. Maybe we would finally get a bad guy captain that has never been done on sci-fi. I thought Gideon was a good character, but you get the feeling Cole looked around at day two and was like, what did I get myself into? Back to comedy land for me. Summer, what do you have to say about that?
I beg to differ. I just think I didn't get the feeling that he didn't want to be there. I didn't. And I did buy him as a different kind of captain.
Yeah.
You know? And for the whole back to comedy thing, I'm sorry. Did you ever see American Gothic? My goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, that
I'm going to have to ask you to come in tomorrow and watch that DVD set.
I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday.
Yeah. And watch this.
And watch this DVD set. No, seriously, if you can find American Gothic, I recommend it. There's a lot of, I'm going to say it was American Horror Story, but with stronger ratings controls.
Right.
Because it aired on, was that ABC? Or CBS. I honestly don't remember what network broadcasted now. I think it was ABC. I could be wrong. But
well,
that,
you know, here's the other thing. His comment is of seeing a more straight-laced captain. No, I don't think I don't know exactly what they would have done with the character of Gideon, but I don't think they were going to kill him off. I think he was going to be there for the entire run.
No, because what we know of the plan for Excalibur having to go on the run, I mean, his character was built to survive that kind of situation. He was going to end up being the right man in the right place at the right time, just like Sheridan was when Mars and was it Orion 7 and all the colonies started breaking away in response to the martial law declaration from Clark.
Yep.
He was the right man at the right place at the right time to draw a line in the sand at Babylon 5, you know? And I believe that Gideon, the way he was portrayed to us, and what little we had learned of his past at the time, and what we have since learned about his nature from the tidbits that we've gleaned from all the secret documents, he was going to be the right man to get them through that.
I agree. It was all attitude.
Okay, here we go. Joe's point number two. To use the apocalypse box or not. If Cole wasn't coming back, you could still use it as a cheat to recast. Say it has Gideon's soul, or whatever the soul hunters get, and shove it into another actor or actress. Yet, I don't see Galen going along with this, so either Mathewson would have to do it, or Dorina would do it, which would lead to giant problems down the road. We know in the other drafts it could possess people, so if Galen does decide to destroy it after Gideon is gone, it being the apocalypse box, can he destroy it, or will it possess him or someone else? To me, the apocalypse box is such a neat thing, I am thinking they would use it and it would backfire in taking someone over. I think the apocalypse box is one of those great wild cards that we'll have so much fun speculating over, and yet we will never really know the answer.
Yeah. We are probably never going to know the full extent of that. I'm okay with that, actually.
I am too.
There's so much stuff in the universe that's still a mystery and always will be. So.
Yes. I will say it's one of the very few magic items in the science fiction universe of the Babylon 5 universe that I don't have any problems with.
I'll agree with that. It could have been its own story. It could have had its own story in that universe.
Well, and it probably did, and I think that's what's so intriguing about it, is what little we got of it was just so – because it was so weird and creepy – and you just knew there was more to it than what you were getting. And I think that's a lot of it.
Right. And every time Sisko looked into it, wait a minute, what?
Okay. We're going to have somebody email in Tim a poll, which rank these magical items in terms of least offensive.
Yes.
The apocalypse box, the triluminary, and the Bracciri magic chalk.
Oh, I could rank them for you right now.
No. I want you to do your homework. Give us a full paragraph on each one.
Okay, I can do that for you.
All right, so do we have more of...
We have more, but I think we're going to save those for a little later because it'll engender some more... conversation. Let's go ahead and run some more voicemails.
Okay.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to the beginning of show 254. And Summer mentioned about this news item about Captain Power coming out on DVD, and I never watched it when it came on, basically, because it really was a toy tie-in, and if I remember what was the gimmick there was that you had this toy which sort of interacted with the TV show itself. So I never watched it at all, except in maybe a couple seconds in passing the channel. That was it. Though I do recall that this JMS writing that Babylon 5 or the Babylon Station or something like that is mentioned in one of the episodes.
Thank you, Neil. Now I don't feel so bad about saying I had no interest in watching it at the time either.
It wasn't that there was no interest. I'm not sure people even knew what time it was on. I didn't find it until the end, I think. And I had no idea that there was a toy gun that you could interact with the TV show with.
Really? That's all I knew it for, was the fact that you got it. Yeah,
I wanted the gun.
Completely clueless. Completely clueless until later. I'm like, what? Wait, there's a toy?
Now, here's the irony. As I recall, here's the thing. What little I ever caught of it was generally the credits, because it was some. I want to say, if memory serves, I had set my VCR to record, you know, to catch the show I wanted, you know, a few minutes before, so I don't miss the opening. So I would end up catching the tail end of the credits of Captain Power, and it was all the whole shooting the bad guys with the toy gun or whatever. And I think, if memory serves, the show that I was recording was actually Beast Wars, the Transformers Beast Wars, that Larry DiTillio was the script supervisor for.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as toy tie-ins go, I really loved Beast Wars, because it was actually the writing on it, I thought was... given that it was a toy tie-in, I thought the writing of it was pretty clever, and they did some interesting things with some of the stories. But as far as Captain Power went, as far as I knew, the whole gimmick was that you could shoot your toy gun at the thing like you're shooting the bad guys. And to me, you know, nobody said anything ever that, you know, you might want to check it out, because despite that, it's got some interesting things going on. It was all just about the toy.
Interesting.
If now, I remember correctly, I think there was a game they actually sold that was very similar to that, except it had a VHS tape, and it kind of worked the same way, except it was predetermined, of course, and you could still fire at the screen and do all the stuff.
I wonder if any of those actual toy guns still exist out there.
I'm sure somebody's got one somewhere.
Interesting. Now, but yes, go ahead.
I was going to say, Neil's other comment about character or the mention of Babylon Project, the Babylon Station on the on the show. I do recall reading somewhere where JMS said that one of the characters, he wrote a bit of dialogue where somebody asked the character what his favorite TV show was, and he says it was Babylon Station or something to that effect.
Well, I do have the DVD set for Captain Power. They sent me a copy of it.
Yeah.
I will be making my way through it, since I will have more time on my hands really soon. But the artwork on it is gorgeous. You know who do you know who did the artwork for this set? Drew Struzan.
That name doesn't mean.
He did a lot of the famous Indiana Jones and the Harry Potter posters.
Oh,
you
okay.
You recognize his artwork the minute you see it.
Okay.
Yeah, they sent me an art book, a collection of his art to do a review on last year for Slice. It is a fantastic, fantastic book. Yeah, Neil said he did a lot of graphic novel covers. I think between him and Dave Dorman, that's like 90% of the Star Wars art out there. But yeah, you recognize his artwork when you see it, and the what he did for the I think it's Captain Power, and there was another one, Skeleton. Oh, I can't remember the other set that came out, but the artwork on it is gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. Just saying, I'm a sucker for good art.
No, I'm right there with you.
Hello, this is Nelson Boyd listening to show 254 about the deep geeking about Fiona Avery's tried and true script, and that just makes me think that it'd be interesting if you could possibly get Fiona Avery onto the show and talk to her about her experience with Crusade and... and working with JMS, that should prove to be an interesting interview. Anyway, hope that that is a possibility one of these days. That's all.
Not an impossibility.
Yeah.
I think we interviewed her 6-7 years ago for Dragon Page, for a book she'd put out and a comic book series she was working on.
Oh, there you go.
Hello, this is Neil from Broly listening to Show 254 and the discussion about thieves and thieves' guilds and so forth. And it just brought to mind Terry Pratchett's Discworld, which, you know, had a assassin's guild, and I think it probably had a thieves' guild of some kind there. And so, anyway, that's one example of such a thing in books that might be good for reference. That's all.
Okay. Under consideration.
Put it on the long list.
Yes.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to Show 254, and Tim just brought up a question about some of these scripts, unproduced scripts, and whether they were considered canon or not. And I think you know, the only ones that are considered canon are ones that JMS has, you know, gone through and done some editing with. The ones which he had, you know, released, which were shot, but had gone to some level of production effort behind them, those ones should be considered canon. But the ones which we don't think that he even took a brush through are just out there as possibilities. That's all.
Well, I think that's one of those that, oh, I don't know. I'm not even quite sure how to phrase what I'm thinking about it. I hear what you're saying. If it's only just a story treatment, then it never reaches a level of production where you consider it to be canon. But I think to a certain degree, given that the tale itself hasn't ever really been finished, and because we're not getting any further material, how can you consider any of the unproduced stuff to be quote-unquote canon? It's part of the story, but if you're not telling any more story that does or does not tie into what we've got, I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. They were being worked on to be part of the official storyline. They just didn't have the time to finish it and film it.
Right.
So I would actually think that the scripts would be canon. The finished scripts that would be canon, including Peter Woodward's, that they had already said this is going into season two. This will be a season two story. I mean, how can that not be canon if they've already said, okay, we're gonna slate this one for season two, period? That means they were going to do it. It was on the production slate to be made for season two.
Sure, but then what do you do with something like War Story, which, while it wasn't necessarily, well, it obviously wasn't a script, it was a fully developed story that had significant ramifications for the tale that was being unfolded, and by extension, the unfinished Walls of Hell, or whatever the Detilio story was, that that had Matheson possessed by the Apocalypse Box.
I believe you have to consider that as part of the canon, because they were still working on those. They were planning to actually put those on film. Okay. We know that they were going to probably be polished a lot more, streamlined a little bit more, maybe tweaked here and there, but they were being worked on. They were planning to put those on film. I have to imagine that you'd have to consider at least the major plot points from those stories part of the canon.
Sure, but the wrinkle in all that is we don't know any of the details to those stories.
Other than what actually got put on paper.
Right, which in some cases is maddening in its incompleteness. I mean, I think it's one of those situations where it's different than like in the Star Trek universe. Do you consider the animated series canon or not? Because whether you do or don't, what you're dealing with is a complete run of a show, and they told their stories. Crusade never got to really tell all of its story.
Yeah.
So if we decide, if you and I say what happened was after Matheson was possessed by the Apocalypse Box and they flew the Excalibur into this third dimension of hyperspace, and that's where they found Dorina floating around in a giant egg, and when they broke her out, she was shaped like a Pez dispenser, but then they went back through hyperspace and she came out of the Pez. Well, how is that any more or less canon than anybody else's decision of how they came back? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So, you know what? One more thing to argue about. I'm good. I'm good with that.
All right. Well, let's have one more, and I think we're going to wrap up this episode.
Hey, Babcasters, it's Gary, and I wanted to share something I got for myself over the holidays. I managed to pick up a Season 5 Babylon 5 cast jacket. It's in great shape, and even better, it's in my size. I'm just curious, has anyone else picked up anything interesting B5 over the holidays, be it an old script book, a new copy of the DVDs, a comic book perhaps? I'm just curious if anyone else was in the B5 season of giving, either to themselves or as a recipient. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
You officially suck.
I was just going to simply say that I was envious.
Oh, my goodness. That is awesome, though. A real crew jacket, that's yeah. A hard, hard thing to come by. The fact you found one in your size is just awesome.
And there's no one more deserving than Gary to find something like that. It gets back kind of to the collectibles sort of thing. I'm not a collectible enough guy that I'm really out there looking for that kind of stuff. So I would have to say no. There was no B5 acquisitions.
No B5 acquisitions. There are a few key prop items that I would still like to have. You know, I would still like to get there. I would love to find a couple of data crystals.
That would be fun to have.
I would love to have a PPG.
Yes.
You know, just like a PPG with maybe like one or two spare caps, you know? Because those are cool. Those are cool looking. You got to admit. Those
I agree. Cool yeah, absolutely.
I would still love to have an Army of Light jacket or uniform.
That would be awesome.
That'd be really awesome, you know. And since we're going down wish lists, damn it, I still want an original Battlestar Galactica Colonial Viper blaster. You know, the pilot, the blaster with the belt. That they had.
Right.
Those blasters were just damn cool. Yep. They were bulky, but they were shaped in such a way that they drew those things like old West gunslingers. That was awesome.
Yep.
It was awesome. I wanted one of those badly. Actually, my favorite toys that I still have, I prefer the old style Viper and Cylon Raider over my Star Wars. I have two different X-Wing fighters and two different Millennium Falcons. And you know what? I would actually trade the Star Wars ships for more like one of the modern, the new Battlestar Galactica Vipers.
Nice.
Was it the Mark 7s? I would.
Mm-hmm.
Those are nice Vipers.
Nice ships, no doubt.
Yes.
Very good. Well, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Feedback Palooza, but don't fret, everyone. There's more to come. because we're just that way.
Yes, we have much more voicemail of yours to catch up on before we jump into the fun stuff with the comics.
Oh, this
and...
is fun stuff. Don't put it
no,
like
no,
that.
No, 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 no. More. Well, people think we're done because we're done with the stuff you can watch. Like, no, 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 people. There's more fun. Trust me. There is more fun coming along. But for now, we will call it the end of Feedbackapalooza, Double Choco Grande Latte, Part 1. And as always, you can go to our website, BabylonPodcast.com. You can send us an email, like so many people did today. That email address is BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can call in your voicemail, because it seems like Neil is hogging up the line these days.
Yeah.
So that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year that I finally got off my keister and got all this stuff over to Jeremy for a feedback palooza.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.